This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
We have not been canceled or kicked off Destination America, and we are not on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. There's probably, those channels probably have more exposure.
Dude,
than
that was bad, man. That was bad.
Really? Seriously?
Hey, yes!
I have a fucking reputation.
for I don't know, Johnny. I mean, you come up with some bad puns.
I'm a fan of them, but oof.
Welcome, Place Me Nation, to your home for everything modern day wrestling. I know it's been a little while, but we're back. Place Me Nation's Main Event. I am your host, Scott Criscolo. You hear my guests in the background because they have indistinguishable pipes. We are going to have a fun show this evening. It's been a busy fall, so we haven't had as many as usual, but we are going to be here this evening, and we're going to talk about two things, two very important things. First off, of course, this Sunday in Hotlanta, the 2015 Survivor Series, 25 years of the Dead Man, and of course, a tournament, which we always love tournaments. And then in our second segment, we are going to wax nostalgically about a very sad wrestling death this past weekend. In my opinion, one of the greatest technical wrestlers, and also, for me, one of the most underrated heels in the history of this business, and that is the great Nick Bockwinkel, who passed away at the age of 80. And we will talk about his career and some moments we remember when we used to watch AWA on ESPN, and some of his great feuds, and most importantly, feuds that didn't involve Vern Gagne, because that's, of course, his highlight one, but he had a few others that had some pretty stellar matches. But we'll get into that later. Let me bring in my guys, though. This gentleman I've had on often here on Main Event. We've been on other shows. He's been on the Place to Be podcast. One of my favorite people. He is the co-host of the Dangerous Alliance podcast with my PIC, Mr. Azzaro. And I'm going to say it the Parv way, guys. Ready? See if I can do it.
Condescendingly?
Will from Texas.
Ah, you fucked it up. It's good old Will from Texas.
Good old Will from Texas. Well, whatever. Have a sleep in
good, good old, good old, good old Will from Texas.
From Texas. I think the best one is when he tries. Well, I'll have to get that in a minute. Will, what's going on?
Nothing, buddy. Just enjoying the Spurs season and not enjoying wrestling lately, but it's okay. It's okay. I'm looking forward to Sunday's show.
I think a lot of people... I think a lot of people haven't. That's not a secret, but I'd like to think that what everybody wanted, they actually got, sadly, through an injury, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But Will, always good to have you on. And making his Main Event debut, I've been on with this gentleman a few times. I've, of course, been on when I was able to be on the pay-per-view reaction shows. The last time I think him and I were on the same show, I think it was the reaction show for the Hall of Fame. I think that was the last time. He is the host of Brain Busters and a other myriad of shows from the PWO PTBN podcast network, Mr. Johnny Sorrows.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, dude, that Hall of Fame podcast, that was a long Hall of Fame. And it was a long, long bottle of Long Island Iced Tea that I put away from during that Hall of Fame. Thanks hey, for wait, having
wait,
me on.
But wait a minute. Didn't we do a SummerSlam show, the three of us?
Did we? No, because I was at SummerSlam.
No, but like one of the lead-up shows, not the reaction show. I thought one of the SummerSlam week Goodwill Wrestling shows. I thought three of us did a show there.
Maybe?
Almost positive we did.
You might have been on. Maybe you were on Main Event. I definitely know that I have not been on with good old JS since the Hall of Fame before Mania.
Good old
it might have been another show.
My God, King!
My God! Anyway, this is it is an honor and a privilege to have both of you on. This is the first time that there has ever been a Main Event where we have been straight up PWO style. So this is pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Guys, Sunday, Hotlanta, the ninth Survivor Series.
Jesus Christ.
29 overall, and of course, 25th for the Dead Man, although he hasn't been at everyone. It's more like his, what, 18th probably? Or 19th maybe? We'll talk about Taker in a minute. Let's talk about the main focus. Of course, what happened on November 4th in Dublin, there was a match between Seth Rollins, and I'm trying to remember who his opponent was. Was it Reigns?
Kane.
It was Kane. Another thing for Jordan Duncan to hate Kane about.
He didn't have much to do with them.
Yeah, I know. JD doesn't care. And apparently blew out all three of his... I mean, when you blow one ligament, all right. You blow two, wow. But to blow all three, you really had to have fucked yourself up pretty good. So so he, of course, had to forfeit the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And now we have one of my favorite things and one of JR's favorite things, a tournament, because I love tournaments. Because tournaments, if you book them right, can spawn other feuds. So we have a tournament to decide who will be the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion, similar to the Deadly Games of 1998. But fortunately, we'll definitely have better matches than that tournament had. First off, Saros, give me your recap overall of Seth Rollins' reign, regardless of how it ended, which is really sad because you don't want to see anybody get hurt.
I know I'm large, but I'm not a plural.
I like Saros. It's kind of like I'm doing the Pat Patterson, you know, like Shawn Michael.
Ooh, really? Okay. Then I'll see you later after the show.
I was waiting for that. Saros, hold on.
Yeah. Scott, that would make you the Steve Lombardi of the relationship.
Oh boy. Or the Sylvain Grenier or Terry Garvin. Good large laundry list. Saros, your thoughts on his reign. In general, regardless of how it ended, which was very sad, but what did you think of his reign? Positives, negatives? What did you think?
I liked it because I like a bad guy champ. I like a sniveling bad guy champ. They don't do it a lot. Mm-hmm. I like it. I wouldn't like it all the time. I was getting ready for the build up to him losing it soon enough or getting towards Mania. I liked the whole thing where they were just putting him through hell to, you know, test him by fire, mm-hmm. you know, and see if he's really the man for it. Some angles and feuds were better than others that I enjoyed. Like I liked the Ambrose stuff. As much as I laughed at some of the Kane stuff that just got done, there was some of it was some of the matches themselves were like. Ugh. Not good, not good, but I just like some of the silliness involved. But as far as success or like when people say, "Oh, he's the ratings," the reason him being champion is the reason the ratings are down, and I'm like, I don't think so. I think the reason the ratings are down probably a myriad of other things. I don't think it's because people really care that much about who's holding the belt, whether or not they're going to watch the show. I don't think so. I don't, you know, it's a 3-hour wrestling show, you know, but I'd like him to, he's not the best promo in the world. So he's very cackling comic book. He has the fake villain laugh, which doesn't work for him at all, but he'll be back and he'll evolve and change. So I dug it, but I'm not sad it's over.
Hmm. Will, I know, again, you've been a little down on the product, but Seth Rollins, at least the reign specific, did you see any positives during his reign? I mean, did he get the job done that he needed to get done in that character with the title?
Well, I think you got to remember there are kind of two phases, right? There was the J&J security phase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there was the I have to prove I can do it on my own, and I'm semi quasi feuding with the authority while proving my worth phase. You know, there's right. The one where the authority was backing them, and then there's the phase where they weren't. So I kind of enjoyed the J&J security thing, but I didn't like the way that I'll say this, you know, unless you're Vince McMahon, I don't like authority figures being the dominant factor, you know, mm-hmm. he's just a hired gun for the authority. I think it's a played storyline. I think it's a tired storyline.
I agree.
And I think that the way that they would have Triple H and stuff kind of emasculate him and, you know, nobody gets over on him. I think the last person to get over on the authority was who? Daniel Bryan leading up to his title win, or maybe?
Well, Sting last year. Sting a year ago, at least that night.
Yeah, just that night. Yeah.
Yeah, and then of course the storyline looped like 3 weeks later. So when Cena had to, Cena had to get rid of it anyway.
Yeah,
so.
it meant nothing, you know. But so I didn't like that part. I think my biggest problem I have with Rollins is because I think he's a great talent in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I enjoy watching him wrestle, but he wrestles like a babyface. He's not a heel wrestler. You know, his motions, his movements. He doesn't carry himself like a heel in the ring, even though I enjoy the matches. Like, I like the Cena matches. I think that if he kind of changed his ring style to a more heel style, I think it would have been a lot better.
Right.
So I have mixed feelings on it, man. I mean, I don't like the booking of WWE, period. You know, I don't like the way they book. Mm-hmm. I don't like Vince McMahon's vision of what wrestling should be. You know, especially, I mean, Johnny, you've been there with me on the reaction shows. NXT tears it up with simple, basic, tried and true traditional booking, kind of like, you know, special after special. But yet this mega monolith of a company can't seem to figure out how to do that. You know,
I think NXT books exactly the way you said to an audience of people who that's what they want.
But I mean, the audience has changed. I mean, the audience that NXT applies to, you could say Daniel Bryan, you know, appeals to, excuse me, not apply, appeals, mm-hmm. appeals to.
He got beyond that.
Yeah, but I mean, so did Kevin Owens. Look at Cesaro right now. I mean, these mm-hmm. are the people
who
embrace it. Cesaro is one of the few people in that company right now who gets a genuine reaction.
Yeah, well, we're gonna get to my feelings on that a little bit.
Yeah, Oh, I know we're gonna argue.
But here, I just want to argue because I was talking about this with a few other people the other day about the whole wrestling like a babyface mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. Rollins, we were also talking about Jay Lethal in Ring of Honor. That sounds like one that
exact
that
same thing.
Exactly. That's why I brought it up. I think. And I'm not defending it or saying it's better or worse. I think there's an entire generation of wrestlers where the whole wrestling like a heel, wrestling like a babyface, is not so much applying anymore as it's there's a style, and whether you're a good guy or a bad guy is more about your promos and who you're affiliated with. And whether you want to say it's a lost art of wrestling like a heel, which I actually tend to agree with, I think that's why you're seeing so much of that.
You know, the counter to that, Johnny, is someone from that same generation, Kevin Owens, is a great heel. You know, but what I'm saying, though, is that when you have a guy who can be a great heel, no, it matters. And it's an issue because there's a guy that people cheer for Kevin Owens, but at the same time, he does things that a heel would do. You know,
I agree, as
a heel fan, you're always going to have people who cheer for heels. I mean, were one back in the 80s. But
yeah, like me.
That style, you know, I think it takes people out, you know, that it's just a performance. It reminds you it's just a performance. It's just fake. It's all stereo. It's all choreographed.
I'm not arguing that at all. I'm saying I think that's the reason why, though, is what I said.
Let me get into match styles for a minute, because you were talking, Will, about heels not wrestling like heels anymore.
Sure.
JR and I are in the midst of during our Vintage Vault refreshes. We're watching the all the Saturday night's main events, and watching like TV matches, like mid level TV matches. We're not talking, you know, superstar squashes, but not pay per view, but like a good solid, you know, network TV Saturday night's main event match. Not necessarily that a heel has to be bigger than a babyface, but it is difficult to dictate the heel tempo of a match when you aren't built to wrestle like that. When you have guys that all came from the same generation of wrestling style where they all do the same things, they all do the same fast-paced kind of indie style, gone are the days where, and I think also the audience is out of this realm as well, and this is going to be a terrible analogy, and don't laugh at me, but I'm just using it because he's on my mind. When you have a guy like a King Kong Bundy or an Andre, who in that era of being in the Heenan family leaned on guys and headlocks and things, I'm not saying once for like 9 minutes, but just to at least keep the tempo going and fire the crowd up and get them pissed off. Little things like that are what people like Seth Rollins don't do. They just wrestle as if it doesn't matter whether you're getting booed or cheered. You're going to wrestle throwing yourself around and tempo and, you know, face heel tempo bounces back and forth. And it's okay to do that maybe in the last 5 minutes of a match, but somewhere in the middle, you've got to build sympathy. Simple match equations are gone in this era of wrestling. And I think it's a lost art. And we're going to talk about a great heel who was Seth Rollins' size in Nick Bockwinkel, who was able to do that at 6'2", probably what, 245, 250 tops. He wasn't, you know, Jerry Blackwell or Bruiser Brody or anything like that. He was a small guy, but he knew how to dictate heel tempo of a match to get the crowd wanting to rip his throat out.
He's still pretty big dude. He's still pretty big dude.
But hold on. Let's just go back to like smaller heels that were effective. Think about Shawn Michaels in 1997.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, we're talking a guy who Seth Rollins, for all purposes, he could have been Shawn Michaels 2015 for all that matters in terms of size and you know, dynamic offense or whatever, right? But look at him. I mean, at that one night only pay-per-view. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Great show.
You know?
Yep.
One of the most like just electrifying heel reactions ever.
Yep.
And he played it up perfectly.
Yep.
I mean, as Survivor Series 97, you know, show that, you know, 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wiping his butt with the Canadian flag.
Sticking it up his nose.
You know what I mean? But doing things, but also doing stuff within the context of the match. You know what I mean? Choking, just little things like that that just matter. You know, like I said, that's why I love Kevin Owens' heel work right now, because here's a guy who does not care if those fans cheer boo. He's going to just be a bastard in that room.
Right. And I think Owens is like, and that's why he stands out. But I'm going to say this even applies. If you're watching Ring of Honor, you look at, then he's like, Kazarian and Daniels come out, no matter what you think of them as wrestlers right now. And they're one of the only ones that actually know how to work like bad guys.
Yep, I agree.
Do it.
Yep.
Them and the kingdom are getting it. But
who's the kingdom? Which one's the kingdom?
That's the one led by Bennett, Maria.
Yeah, Bennett, Maria, and who the hell's the other guy?
Ben Maria and Cole.
Okay. Oh, yeah, Adam Cole. Yeah.
Well, or someone who really gets a heel reaction, BJ Whitmer, because they genuinely hate him.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, but that's you know that whole, I used to always say X-Pac heat was fake. You change it to Whitmer heat, and I'm going to say it's real.
JR and I have had that debate about if X-Pac heat is actually real. He doesn't think so. I've always thought that there definitely was for certain people. Look at another guy who was a great heel in the 90s. Also in a federation where, or in a promotion where, booking a match style was not normal. It was off the cuff. And that's Shane Douglas, who was an awesome heel in ECW, but he wasn't, you know, 6'9".
No, but he was much bigger than most of those guys.
But I mean, he was what, 280, maybe 285 tops. But again, another guy who knew how to wrestle a style without boring the audience. I'm not saying that you got to be like Yokozuna and have a nerve pinch for 12 minutes. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the art of building tension in the middle of particularly a long match, is lost sometimes in this new era of wrestling in terms of like a heel face combination. We could talk about this topic all night. Before we get to the tournament, let's talk about some of the other feuds going on right now. The fact that the Go Home Raw Monday was involving Paige and Charlotte, I was okay with that. I mean, it'll be a good match Sunday for the Divas Championship. I have a feeling Charlotte will keep it. Do I think it needed to be at the end of this Raw? No. maybe at the end of last week's Raw, or maybe a Raw leading up to this show, maybe do it. The go-home Raw, I don't know if the bookers were trying to make a point. What did you think of that, Cesaro? What did you think of that being last on the go-home Raw? I mean, I know that it's a big deal and the Divas division is a little better, but what were your thoughts on that being the last thing on the go-home Raw of this big show?
If we're going to put aside a bit whether or not the Flair stuff was necessary, that's, you know, that controversy.
Right.
As far as just doing this.
Complete garbage.
Yeah.
As far as just doing this in that slot you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't care about the content of it. I'm just talking about that segment.
It's different. I think it was definitely done on purpose, you know, for them to be like, you know, look, and now we're giving the women a,
right,
you know, this slot. That's definitely one of the main reasons why. It's not because it's the hottest angle going into the show.
Oh, clearly.
And so I had no problem with it from that perspective. And the way it ended, I thought, you know, how they got there, the brawl to end it was like, we're so used to the contract signing fights, you know, that always happen. And this is one that felt fucking real. It felt, you know, like they've lost control, you know? So from that perspective, I liked it there. Now how they got to it, I was like, really insulting David Flair like that, saying that he didn't try. You know, right. We know he did. We know David Flair didn't try. We watched Nitro.
We remember in 2002 when Taker beat the crap out of him before WrestleMania 18. It was like his last Raw moment before the Flair retirement.
That was the highlight of David Flair's career.
That was the best thing in his career ever. You're right, Will. And, boy, see, I was going to use that joke on This Week in Wrestling, but instead I chose to do it here. So
thank you.
I kind of stole your thunder there.
Thank you. That's okay. Not the first time. But go ahead.
But as far as the Reed stuff goes, I'm just not getting. I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, but you know,
well, it was garbage, John.
No, I'm not defending it. I just didn't know if that's.
And another thing. Oh my God! And I'm just going to flat out say it. See, we don't have a. I know on Alliance, Will, you guys have the swear tip jar or whatever. If I had that on this show, Fort Knox would be too small. So I don't care. So,
yeah, there's no such restriction here.
No restrictions here. If they pushed Paige's tits any higher, they'd be in her fucking nose.
Yep.
I mean, Jesus Christ. She went from being like an A cup to like a 4D or something. I mean, God, how much higher can they shove them? We get that.
She doesn't want to get implants, so it's a push-up bra.
Squeeze them as tight as possible. Yeah. My God, you can light a match between them.
Those milky white and lovely.
Milky white and luscious. But we'll do picks later. But I just was curious what you guys thought of that being last. I know, Will, you probably hated it.
I didn't hate it being last at all.
Okay. And I'm not talking about the content. The content was – some of it was trash. I get that. I'm just saying that segment in general. It didn't bother you being last?
No. In fact, I think that the fact that the ratings – tank in the third hour, I think that's where you do put it. You at this point, they're going to have to just simply adjust and have the big main event angle at the end of the second hour, you know, because they're losing. I mean, this is a pattern now. This isn't like an anomaly.
Right.
They lose viewers as the show goes on, whether you want to argue or use football as an excuse or whatever. That's the pattern now. So why not put them in that position? It no longer draws. And WWE does such a horrible job of promoting their main events week in and week out that, you know, why not just throw the women on last? Because that's a meaningless spot now. It's not something that people are going to stay with the show for 3 hours.
Now, here's an interesting.
It doesn't matter who's there either.
I watch it on Hulu, so.
I watch it on Hulu, too. Here's an interesting theory, and this is totally off the cuff, but we'll circumvent back to Sunday in a minute. I read somewhere, it's probably not true because it sounds utterly ludicrous from a business standpoint. Nobody in WWE, certainly not, I don't know about Vince, certainly not Triple H. He said it to Steve Austin on the podcast. He didn't hide it. They hate that Raw is 3 hours. Somebody said, again, this is just, you know, these typical wrestling boards on Facebook, you know, that they're purposely tanking the third hour So USA will tell them they can go back to 2 hours?
No, that's garbage.
I think that's garbage.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
I don't know about that either. Because I think that's, from a business perspective, that's stupid. Because they still get paid for the spots in the third hour. So it's
right,
not like,
right. Yeah, no, purposely tanking. No, but USA is getting SmackDown now. I could see them because it's known that most everyone there does not like doing 3 hour Raws. And if they have SmackDown on USA, they can say, well, here's all this content you want. Can we take one Raw back maybe an hour? I think that might, you know, be broached maybe, mm-hmm. but yeah, I don't think there's any conspiracy theory.
Right. You know what they really need to do with that? And like, for a while, I was really tired of the brand split, but now that it's been taken away from me, I see the error of my ways. Even if you don't call it an official brand split, they need to have two completely separate crews working these shows. So, to the point where people who want to see, let's just say Cesaro or Kevin Owens, they have to tune in on SmackDown. They can't see him on Raw, and they have to commit to that because it's killing SmackDown. Because SmackDown used to be like, okay, well, Raw sucked this week, but hey, man, SmackDown was really kick ass. Yeah. You know,
or, we go back and forth too.
Yeah, depending on who was on which roster, sure. But now, like, SmackDown is completely meaningless. Man, I used to collect matches for Match of the Year comps, and SmackDown would always have a ton of matches, and I don't think I've heard one, like, Match of the Year recommendation for SmackDown in, like, a year and a half.
I've caught a handful. And I mean, even I don't watch SmackDown regularly.
But I'm talking about legitimate Match of the Years that you're going to remember like 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now. Like, those don't exist on SmackDown anymore.
Right.
Well, you know, it's funny because that's Daniel Bryan has gone on record of saying when he got the Intercontinental title is he wanted to push to be on SmackDown exclusively and kind of do that. That was definitely an idea that was broached.
The problem is if you split the brands again, then you got to split the belt again. And then who the hell wants to have that happen again?
Hold on.
I don't think you have to.
Because if you build up like the way Cena was doing with the U.S. title, if you build up the belt, like, you can run like a 3-month program where the world title's on Raw and then do a 3-month program where the world title's on SmackDown. This is where I disagree with people a lot of times, where belts don't matter. They matter when you make them matter.
That's ludicrous. That's one thing, Will, that I will jump on your bandwagon in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, because
belts,
I mean,
will always matter. They have to. Otherwise, why are we here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because there's much better episodic TV on there than WWE TV. That's for sure. So, I mean, I know, because a bunch of it's collecting on my DVR right now.
Yeah.
You know, and what, you know what's not on my DVR? Raw or SmackDown, because I don't feel like it's can't miss TV anymore.
No, but Hulu. Really? Hulu saves me from that, so that's good too.
Yeah, well, I don't do Hulu, so I mean, but I understand the people who do. I mean, but I'm not one of them. So, but if I don't miss Raw or SmackDown, I know I can read a recap and be perfectly fine. And if there's, like, you know, that rare match like Cesaro Reigns, I know I can seek it out, or I can watch it a month later on the network. You know,
but here's the thing about the brand split, and you're right. Back in the day, people were just clamoring for it to be over left and right. Yeah. And now people look back and be like, oh, maybe we were wrong about that. The brand split pay-per-views weren't that great sometimes.
Oh, that's a fair point. It's the pay-per-views.
The pay-per-views, were not, then they had to merge the pay-per-views real quick, were great. Yeah.
The big difference though now is that they haven't had this deep of a roster in a long time.
Which
is
funny because every time I hear a criticism from the like wrestlers, like Austin and those guys on this podcast, they keep talking about how the roster isn't deep at all.
No. I think what they're saying about it not being deep is that there aren't any bona fide stars.
And no. They're literally what they've literally said is there's not enough guys there. What my point was, not the star thing. I've heard guys say the roster is too light. There's not enough people.
I've heard that. I've heard that there aren't enough stars.
I've heard that too. Of course,
or that people don't care about enough people.
Now, having said that,
they don't care. Nobody cares about
NXT. And there is a brand split. It's called NXT.
Let me circumvent back to the. Let me circumvent back to Sunday talking about the roster. I'm going to try and bring this back. They say that.
Scott. Just, you know, if you get me and Sorrow on a podcast, we don't follow format well.
But that's right. That's right. It's best for business.
It's like taking two FM radio DJs from 1973.
Hell yeah.
And then placing them on like the pop.
who's up for some moody blues? Well, you definitely got a guy on with you that appreciates good 70s prog rock radio or any rock radio.
Hold on. I'm trying to figure out a way to incorporate Ride My Seesaw into this podcast.
Ride My Seesaw? Strawberry Alarm Clock?
That's Incense and Peppermints, dude.
That's right. I love that song. All right. We talk about the roster.
What does that have to do with Ride My Seesaw?
What, the roster?
What are you guys fucking...
Oh, Strawberry Alarm Clock.
I don't know. I just threw Strawberry Alarm Clock out there. Stream of consciousness when you get...
Yeah. How about some Grand Funk Railroad? Let's fucking rock this motherfucker.
I got to write...
Johnny, no matter what you say, you'll always know I'm your captain.
All right. I got to write these down because that's what I'm going to use for the... I'm going to use these for the bumps in the show when I edit it later. Mm-hmm. All right. So we're talking about the roster. Let's circumvent back to Sunday. If the roster is so thin, why aren't they doing the whole tournament Sunday instead of us having to instead of filling Raw and SmackDown with it? I mean, obviously you're kind of torn here because you need to put matches on the show, but right now we have what, 6 matches to eat up 2.5 hours, 2:45.
I think they're adding some Survivor Series matches or something.
They're going to have to.
Yeah. But here's full tournaments on a pay-per-view where the pay-per-view is pretty much nothing but a tournament never goes well, mm-hmm. to my memory. You know, I don't like it when just the finals, but you do the semifinals and the finals when it's the entire tournament on a, that's why I used to, the King of the Ring used to like be the one I would always skip, you know, I just don't think it works.
Well, it also depends on the guys. I mean, the first one of real consequence, or we could talk about, is WrestleMania 4. That pay-per-view seems like it's about 4 days long.
Oh, my God.
And then on the other side of the coin, you had King of the Rings where, like, 93, you had legit good guys in there, like Bigelow and Brett and Perfect and, you know. And then two years later, and you've got, you know, the Roadie and fucking Savio, you know. So it really...
Good luck, Savio, man.
Savio made a Savage-esque run that day in Philadelphia while batteries are being whizzed through the air.
Very disappointed in that pay-per-view because I was like, I got totally behind Savio Vega. And I was like, as shitty as that pay-per-view was, I was like, they're going to have fucking Savio Vega be King of the Ring, and it's awesome what they're doing. And then he does this miracle run and gets squashed by fucking Mabel.
Yeah.
I was like, ugh.
And then you're trying, and Mo is trying to read the scroll, and oh God, it was just embarrassing while Duracells are whizzing through the air and ECW chants are blasting. All right. Let's go around the horn. Dolph Ziggler versus Tyler Breeze. I don't know if this match will open. Either this match is going to open, one of three matches will open. This, the women's match, or Owens Ambrose will open. What do you think opens? Let me ask that.
Hold on. Is Dolph Tyler Breeze, is it penciled in for sure?
It's.
It's not on the website.
It's on Wiki, and they're usually actually not too bad.
I usually just go by the website. But okay. I'll take your word for it. I guess I'm guessing.
It doesn't say that it's a. It says another WWE Survivor Series match announced, updated pay per view card, and this is on WrestleZone.
Okay. Yeah, I'm on the actual website for the matches. I guess Cesaro Stardust will probably be somewhere in there too, right?
I don't know. Maybe.
Isn't that like Stardust is trying to mess with Cesaro's head or something? Isn't that some storyline that they're doing?
It was going on. No one was paying much attention to it. And then they had the thing with Cesaro on Raw that was awesome, and no mention was made of that feud anymore.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I read SmackDown spoilers, so.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think maybe you made probably some Survivor Series match then. That could be one of those ones I'm going to throw in there.
Yeah, we'll probably know more about that by the time.
The reason why Will's got a point here, the reason why it's not on the site yet, I think, is because they still are never quite sure if they're going to have the pre-match during the pre-show or they're not, and what it's going to be. It seems like they sometimes really change their minds at the last minute with that one.
Mm. All right, well, let's take that out of the equation then. I think Owens Ambrose will open the show.
I agree.
Yeah, sounds like a hot opener.
Yeah. And I think Charlotte Page. Then I think there's supposed to be at least one traditional 5-on-5 match. That'll probably be what you're talking about, Will, with Stardust and Cesaro. Okay. Then Del Rio Reigns. Then probably the Taker Kane versus. I think the two guys will be Harper and Strowman. I don't think Bray's going to wrestle. I think it'll be Harper and Strowman. That's who I think the two guys from that team will be.
Yeah, well, that's a bad choice.
You think so?
Well, I mean, just because. I mean, if you want the best potential match, you're going to put Wyatt and Harper in there.
I agree.
You know?
I agree.
But I guess it depends if they're going to carry the Taker Wyatt feud. Or if they're going to end it. If they end it, I'd say just put Bray in there. I mean, I think Strowman's going to be one of their guys because that's like Vince's handpicked guy. But it's not going to make for a very great match. I guess there are enough other potential good matches on the show where you can put a shitty wrestler in there. I think Strowman's perfectly fine in like a six-man setting where he can just do big spots, tag out.
But right.
In a tag where you're expected to be in the ring for longer than 2 or 3 minutes, I don't know, man. I don't have high hopes for that.
Apparently, according to Jericho, when he's worked with him, he said that he's green as grass, he knows it, and he just listens to everyone in the ring and is like a bass, but just listens well to everyone in the ring about what to do and doesn't give any flack. So
that's good to know. Definitely. And then obviously, there'll probably be a lot of Taker stuff, filler and things. And then obviously the main event, the final match, the tournament final, which most people seem to think will be Reigns Ambrose. Johnny, who wins the tournament?
I really don't know. Reigns seems like the choice, but, I really don't. I'm not thinking it's going to be Del Rio.
No.
But,
I don't know, man. I mean, if they're... I think with the reactions Del Rio's getting, it shouldn't be Del Rio because he's not over, which is sad. But
well, he's not part... I don't think his... I mean, he's the U.S. champion. This isn't his storyline. He's just there to fill a match slot. I mean, this isn't really his storyline.
Yeah.
I think he's just there to fill the match slot, and then we'll... But, I mean, one thing about Del Rio, if he sticks around, he's a guy you could always plug in. He's got world title cred, so
I just think there's going to be some sort of wackiness going on here, and like guys getting eliminated, another guy being thrown into the mix at the last minute because of that sort of thing. So, but I do think if I was just going to make the safe choice, I'm going to say Reigns.
What do you think, Will?
I'm going to go with Reigns.
Okay,
I hope they go the safe route because I don't want to see Reigns go with the Authority and have them emasculate another guy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see Ambrose turn. I don't think people care enough, honestly, right now enough for the turn to get the necessary reaction you'd want a turn to get. You know what I mean? Like if Reigns turns, well, he's already getting booed anyway. Okay. I hear that the reaction to Reigns is up and down. Right,
out here they went at Dallas and Denver 2 weeks ago. They went
it's such a small sample size. It's only one market. It doesn't matter, Johnny.
It goes up and down.
Hold on. Okay, but what I'm saying is that across coming across on TV, that's not what he's getting. You know what I mean?
And he got decent pops last. I mean, him and Cesaro both were getting some pretty good pops. There was a lot of good energy in that match on Monday, I have to say. Sure. I thought Reigns was getting some decent energy.
Oh, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, though, is that, you know, as long as they continue to, like, I want to say, like, make people or make these wrestlers feel unorganic, inorganic. I don't know how you'd say it. I'm from the South. We don't speak well. you know, but as long as they continue to be, you know, scripted to death, and all of them feel like bad actors to me, mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to get that genuine reaction. I think the fact that Cesaro doesn't speak and doesn't have long promos, plus he's great in the ring, is one of the reasons why he gets a genuine reaction, you
right.
know, because
right.
there's nothing right now about Cesaro that feels contrived. Does that make sense?
No, and yeah, it makes sense.
I think that the Reigns-Ambrose dynamic, in a way, that feels contrived. Hey, bro, let's go have some beers tonight. Okay, let's go drink and drive. You know, I mean, it just feels...
You know, I watch Raw, and I don't recall that.
He's such a cynic.
Johnny, you get the point. You know, it's the, you know, the... And they have done those backstage segments after the matches where they talk about, like, going to have a beer.
Yeah. Whatever.
You know, the point
party.
Is, right, the point is...
The message from Mother is against drunk driving, though. But don't think I caught that one.
Oh, man. You know,
I'm hoping that they just go the route of let's just have really good matches and just put over the guy who's going to win it.
Right, you know? Well, let's talk about the big pale elephant in the room. And that is, of course, Sheamus.
Hey, I'm right here.
And that's, of course, Sheamus. Where does he fit in all this? Well,
no, there you go. I wasn't even thinking of him.
You know what? Have him cash it in and have Reigns beat him clean 1-2-3 spear and get that stupid suitcase out of the equation.
Mm. I actually, when I was talking about the Survivor Series match they were talking about, the one with Stardust and the Ascension was one that they're thinking about, but there was a different one that was rumors were going about where it'll be Barrett and Sheamus and people in that, which doesn't mean he won't try to cash the thing in, but I think he's supposed to be in one of those Survivor Series matches.
Hmm. Any other surprises that may pop up tonight? Sunday? I don't think we'll see Cena.
No.
I don't think they're very good at surprises. I think that's the problem right now.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
No, I don't anticipate any surprises. To me, the surprise would have been Cesaro, you know, beating Reigns in an upset of all upsets. And then at that point, all bets are off because you have no idea where they're going.
Right.
You know, but that didn't happen. And I know why they didn't do that. But to me, I mean, it's the winter. It's, you know, it's kind of the dead time for the company. That's the time you really take a chance on a guy like a Cesaro or a Kevin Owens.
And I think they're going to take a chance on a guy like Cesaro, but not in the way you want it.
Yeah, I know, but that's a horrible idea. So let's just get out of the way. Can we get this out of the way? Johnny, mm-hmm. What idea do you think they're going to do for Cesaro?
I have a feeling Cesaro is turning heel, and he is going to go and be Triple H's boy. He's going to wear the fucking suits and that he used to wear and shit. And
at least he'll look good in them.
And be the and be the arrogant fucking character that he's so good at playing. I'm looking at a grown man who's bald, wearing fucking those stupid beatbox fucking earphones.
Yeah, that looked really, really bizarre on Monday.
You know, and, oh, so he wears bizarre all the time. I was just
that's his tribute to Kid, man.
No, they wore those together. It was part of his fucking gimmick.
But it was originally his kid's gimmick.
Right.
Whatever. They did it together, though, and he's still wearing them. You know, he just looks like an old dude trying to look young. It's like, put him in a suit, let him be the guy who sells out, and take up that number one heel spot. You know, the number one heel spot. And it all makes sense. Yeah, within the storyline of, like, he's so frustrated because they keep doing all these things about, you know, he's at this level, he's just there, he's just there. You know, to the point where that's not a fan thing anymore. It's stuff they put on the website and stuff. Triple H mentions it when he was trying to recruit him. He's like, you know, maybe the brass ring you need to grab is, you know, doing, you know, joining, you know, the dark side, whatever the fuck. I just, that's where I see it going. I could be completely wrong.
I hope you're completely wrong. And here's why. Is as much as I love Cesaro in the ring, really, man, I mean, if you think about it, he's not a strong promo, right? I mean, we all agree on that. He's just not.
No,
that's my point. And then he give him has his mouthpiece. Then he has a mouthpiece.
What I'm saying though is that they're not going to book him that way. They never book him that way. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, yeah. Ideally, you want him to have a manager. Ideally, you want Zeb to be there as his manager. You know, but the point is, because he's not a strong mouthpiece, I'd rather, you know, have a quiet baby face. I mean, if you look at some of the best baby faces, I mean, you know, in ring wise, your Ricky Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat was never a great promo, you know, but he was always a main eventer, you know, for the most part. So you can do quiet, great wrestling baby faces, you know, with loud mouth, obnoxious heels as their opponents, and then have the baby face beat them clean in the ring. I think Cesaro's one of the few people on the roster who actually gets a natural face reaction. I don't think there's any reason to mess with that. You know, honestly, I really don't.
And I think because he's getting that reaction now, then when they turn him, the emotion against him will feel real.
No, it'll feel, here's how it's going to feel. Remember when Vince Russo would turn every genuine babyface heel? That's how it's going to feel. Like, shit, they did it again. Why should I even care about anybody? Because they're just going to do something to piss me off, and more people are going to turn off. You know, the few people that would watch the show because of a guy like Cesaro, they're going to turn the channel off.
Right.
Why? Because he's a bad guy? He's still going to be
Because of the stupid booking. Because of the stupid booking. Booking, bad booking kills companies. That's WCW. WCW didn't die because of, you know, necessarily just because of bad action. It died because of bad booking, because it got so stupid and so illogical that people just tuned out.
It also because they lost their TV. I mean, there was a lot of WCW. No,
but all of that though, losing their TV was after they lost X millions of dollars by putting on bad shows.
True, but
that surrounded by terrible, I mean, insanely bad, obnoxious booking.
Well, that true, but and this is another debate for another day. Bischoff said on the JBL Legends show that Turner was always the network guys, the TV people were always squirmy about having wrestling on their TV anyway. So even when they were at their peak, Ted was able to deflect those people away from Bischoff and those guys. But yes, the catalyst of Ted, besides the AOL Time Warner sale, the fact that 2000 was just unwatchable shit, led to that as well. But
well,
anyway,
one thing, Johnny,
me,
sorry, Scott. One thing, Scott.
Yes,
it's been a long day. Is one, I don't believe a fucking thing Bischoff says. Plus, I think he has a really bad memory. But two, it's really hard to like drop a company that's generating like $80 million in revenue or whatever they did in 1998. It's a lot easier to do one when the company's losing $60 million a year or whatever insane amount they lost. You know, it's one thing when a company's making money. It's another thing when they're not making money. So, right. I mean, that's why wrestling left Turner land, yeah. You know.
I disagree with you a little bit on Bischoff, but I used to think he was – and I still think he has selective memory about stuff and other things. I think he's pretty genuine because he's got nothing to lie about at this point. But anyway, great segment so far, guys. And check out Survivor Series Sunday on the WWE Network. There are a few PTB people going to Atlanta on Sunday. And maybe.
Yeah, just for the strip clubs.
The Gold Club's closed, isn't it? Maybe it isn't.
Abdullah's House of Ribs.
That's right, baby. And Chinese food. Ribs, -, and Chinese food. And Will, I'll get back to you, but maybe I will make a maybe I'll be like Del Rio, or maybe I'll be like you know, like ECW One Night Stand. Maybe I'll make a one time return because I go to work a little later on Monday. Maybe I'll join you guys on Sunday night for the
reaction show. Just let me know,
show.
Man.
So,
I know me and Johnny will be there.
Yeah, so. No, maybe I'll join you guys Sunday night.
I have the day off the next day, so look out.
Oh, boy.
I have the week off. We can do a week-long reaction show.
Right.
There we go.
I shouldn't have said anything. when we come back here on the main event, I'm with good old Will Texas and Johnny Sorrow. Or I'll say at the Pat Patterson, Johnny's Sorrows. We're going to talk
Johnny's
about
Sorrow.
We'll talk about the life and career of one of my favorite guys as a kid, and talking about great heels and a way to put good baby faces over is on top of it. The great Nick Bockwinkle next on the main event.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner, at least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile and on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's tag teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brain Buster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Well, the first days are the hardest days. Don't you worry anymore. 'Cause when life looks like easy street, there is danger at your door. Think this through with me. Let me know your mind. Whoa, what I want to know.
And welcome back, Blazer Nation, to the main event. Scott Criscola with
good old Will from Texas
and Johnny Sorrow. That's good, but my favorite one is when he tried to do. Let me see if I can get it right this time.
Exile on Bad Street.
I think that's my favorite. That's my favorite. Arv trying to be tough ism. Bad Street, which is a great show. Great show.
Parv's my boy. Parv's my boy, and I'm the king of trying to do Parv impressions. So,
not bad. I just think it's hilarious. But
the best is I'm like, yeah, nice trying to sound tough talking about Texas, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
PlaceBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. As we say, JR and I are trying to do our we're successfully doing our Vintage Vault refresh. Today on the site, we wrote up Saturday night's main event from October 4th, 1986. So check that out. We did our comments on all the matches. Good show. Glenn Butler with his Wednesday Walk Around the Web. Newest episode of the Sports Evolution. The two Cowboys and Schmitty talked about NFL Week 11, Ronda Rousey losing, some big actually fight this weekend. Canelo Alvarez and Miguel Cotto. Senior's continual hating of Joe Maddon. So check out the newest episode of the Sports Evolution. JR talks about Survivor Series, his own comments as we head into Sunday in Atlanta. And the Kevin Kelly Show from earlier in the week. Ray Rowe returned. And the guys also talk about the week in wrestling as well. Don't forget, we are getting close to the holidays. Christmas, Hanukkah, others. So you have to buy gifts. So on the right of the screen on PlacementNation.com, go to Amazon. The Amazon link is there. Buy all your stuff, and we get a little piece back to help run the site. So thank you in advance for your help. So click on the Amazon link to the right of the screen. Buy all your stuff, and we get a little piece back. So thank you for that. Also, you'll see the link for our JR's and my free ebook as we're doing our Vintage Vault refreshes. That's Volume 1, The Federation Years. So it takes us from WrestleMania 1 to Survivor Series 1992. So check that out as well.
Dude, I swear to God, for a minute I was like, Star Trek? Awesome.
I may do that since I'm going through all the shows now. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. All right, guys. This past weekend, very sad in professional wrestling. We lost one of my favorite guys as a kid. And a guy who never set foot, I don't believe, in a WWF ring. He's probably crossed.
No.
Well, I don't know if he. Well, no, he wrestled in cross. We'll get to that in a minute. But he cross promoted. But I don't know if he actually ever was in the company. If I remember.
I'll tell you in a minute.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute. The great Nick Bockwinkel passed away over the weekend in Las Vegas, at the age of 80. Guy was a second-generation wrestler, former AWA champion, great heel, and one of the defining feuds of the 1970s with Vern Gagne. Began his career in 1955. He went to the University of Oklahoma. Actually, he was playing football, but he had to withdraw the scholarship when he injured his knee. He was the driver when he was young for Yukon Eric. Of course, Yukon Eric, notorious for losing his ear at the hands of Killer Kowalski, right? Was it his ear? Yeah, losing his
ear. It was his ear. Yeah.
At the hands of Killer Kowalski.
I heard actually that before he could drive Yukon Eric, he actually had to drive his ear, you know, and earn his way, you know, up to driving for Yukon Eric.
He was, of course, trained by his father, Warren Bockwinkel, who was a star in the 40s and 50s. I think Lou Thesz actually helped train him as well. He had his first major singles title in 1963 when he won the NWA Pacific Northwest Heavyweight Championship from another father of a future star, Tony Bourne, father of course, Matt Bourne, who would be a great great wrestler in the WWF, and, of course, was Big Josh, and then, of course, he was The awesome, well, Duke, not the.
Well, he was awesome in Portland.
And he's awesome in Portland. Yes, he was. Yep. He was
awesome. Yeah.
Don Owen used him well. He went to Georgia Championship Wrestling after that, developed into a main event star. He was feuding with Dory Funk Jr. And actually feuded with him for the NWA World title. Of course, he never won it. But, of course, his true claim to fame came in 1970. He joined the AWA, formed a team. He was actually Ray Stevens' first tag team wrestler before they he teamed with Ray Stevens before Stevens, of course, teamed with Pat Patterson. They did win the AWA tag titles three times, faced the usual suspects in Minneapolis, the Crusher, Dick the Bruiser, Billy Robinson, those guys. Then, in one of my first, I don't say first moments, but I remember guys, like on an old tape, when AWA used to do like those throwback shows on ESPN, when Ray Stevens turned face and attacked Bobby Heenan after Bobby Heenan won Manager of the Year, and then Bockwinkel attacked him and the tag team broke up.
Mm-hmm.
His first AWA World Heavyweight Championship was November 8th, 1975. He was 40 by then. If you can believe that.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And that ended Fern Gagne's first seven-year reign. Bockwinkel feuded with Billy Robinson, Dick the Bruiser, you know, the usual suspects. Otto Vons, Mr. Saito, Jumpin' Jim Brunzel, Greg Gagne, all the guys. Now, this is, I think, where you were just mentioning, Cesaro. He was involved in the first ever AWA versus WWWF unification match. Him and Bob Backlund wrestled to a double countout at the Maple Leaf Gardens on March 25th, 1979.
Actually, that's not what I was talking about. Oh, but okay. I had no idea that had happened until I just read Bob Backlund's new autobiography, by the way. It's outstanding.
Oh,
and he mentioned that in there. And I didn't know that it happened.
Yeah. I got to get that. I heard the books are – I agree with you. I heard the books very good. Bockwinkel's first reign lasted for – this has to be a typo. It says 2,990 days. That can't be right. Maybe it can be right. No, 75 times – no, that can't be right. Vern Gagne won his last AWA title on July 19th, 1980. And then, of course, Gagne retired. And this is weird. This would never happen now. They just gave the belt back to Bockwinkel after Vern retired. They didn't turn him in or anything. Okay, here you go, Nick. There you go.
No. That was setting a precedent
for
giving the belt back to Nick Bockwinkel.
Of course, and this is where I started watching religiously, obviously the big feud he had, the first big feud I remember him in was, of course, the one he had with Hulk Hogan in 1982 and 1983. The big match was, I think it was it June 82? I thought it was 83. I think it was Super Sunday in 83. It's on the AWA DVD. Pretty sure it's 83. Hogan had originally won the title, but Stanley Blackburn came out, and it was a death to finish, baby. And Bockwinkel got the belt back, and then that's when Hogan got pissed and pretty much left. The other big feuds I remember him having in the 80s, I remember him feuding with Kurt Hennig when actually Bockwinkel was a face. And they had a great match. I want to say it was like New Year's Eve 86. I think they wrestled at the Cow Palace out in San Francisco, and they had like a draw. It was a really good bloodbath.
I think the draw was in Vegas.
Was the draw
in Vegas?
Okay.
It was in Vegas.
It was in Vegas. Okay. I knew it was
the Cow Palace was was that the one where he got knocked out by the change?
Yeah, with Larry.
Let's see. It's right here. February 29th, Jumbo Tsuruta beat Bockwinkel. Bockwinkel. Oh, wow. January 16th, 1986 at the Winnipeg Arena, Bockwinkel and Flair wrestle for the NWA title. That ended in a double countout. Here it is. Months later, he dropped the championship to another second-generation wrestler, Kurt Hennig, at Super Clash. The match ended in a controversial fashion due to interference by Larry Zbysko, who had handed a roll of coins to Hennig to use on Bockwinkel. He retired in 1987, ending a career that spanned four decades. In one of his final matches as an active competitor, he paid Zbysko back for costing him the AWA World title by pinning him on an episode of the ESPN show after knocking him out with a roll of coins. Before we get to his post-retirement stuff, Will, when was the first time you remember seeing Bockwinkel?
when I was a kid on AWA TV on ESPN. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I saw Bockwinkel. I watched so much wrestling as a kid, but
me too. Yep.
I didn't really care for him. I thought he was an old man when I was a kid. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm used to seeing, you know, the guys like Flair and the Rock and Rolls on Crockett,
right?
And watching Steamboat and the Bulldogs and those guys on and even Hogan on WWF, Savage, and he just felt like an old man. I mean, I didn't like Buddy Rose as a kid, you know?
Right.
I thought Buddy
Rose did.
but I mean, now he's one of my favorite he's one of my favorite wrestlers. You know, I didn't like Dick Murdoch as a kid because I thought he was an old man who should have retired. But now he's one of my favorite wrestlers. So I've grown to appreciate Bockwinkel post-childhood.
What about you, Saro? When did you first?
Okay, the first time I saw him was in one of the magazines. And then we got, and you're from the Northeast as well.
Yes.
But we got, during the wrestling boom, suddenly everyone had a wrestling show. And Pro Wrestling USA.
Yep.
A hit. The East Coast, you know, we all know the amalgamation of promotions trying to take on Vince in his own market.
Mm-hmm.
The NWA, the AWA, Memphis, it was everyone at first, and it quickly became just an AWA TV show. And that's the first time I saw Nick Bockwinkel. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of similar to Will in that I'm like, and it feels so stupid to say it. I was like, who's this old boring guy? And then, but there was something about him I liked because I liked the bad guys. And it wasn't too long after that he had his face turn, which was an AWA tradition that at the end of a long career as a heel in the AWA, you get a huge money-making a last run as a babyface.
Right.
That's an AWA tradition. And so I got to see most of that stuff.
Mm. You know what's funny? One of the first toys I bought, wrestling toys I bought, besides the big rubber WWF guys, who I had all those, and they were all awesome. It wasn't even Toys R Us. I think it was Child World. Which is like old school toy store, which is awesome.
I love Child World.
They had AWA dual packs.
Yeah.
One of them I had was Rick Martel. I think it was Baron Von Raschke. And the other one was not Kurt Hennig. It was Nick Bockwinkel. And it might have been Hogan, but I can't remember who the other guy was. Maybe it was Jumbo Saruta.
Definitely not Hogan.
No, it's probably Jumbo Saruta. And I'm like, I have a Nick. And my brother's like, who the hell's that? I'm like, it's Nick Bockwinkel. It's like, you have a Nick Bockwinkel figure? Like, who the hell would have a Nick Bockwinkel figure? It's like, no, I was. And I used to, those guys were great. They weren't as cool as the big rubber WWF guys.
But. Were those the ones that looked like He-Man figures?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so they all had the same body.
Yeah, they all had the same body, just the different heads.
The AWA, during the 80s boom, did try. They put out some toys. They put out like four home videos that were only a half an hour long, or four or five. I had them all, but you already found them in the bargain bin then.
Yes. The first wrestling tape.
The Baron von Raschke doll. That's great. Hey, kids. I was like, don't you want to play with your own very own lovable Nazi? Exactly. You know I do.
Mommy, my figure won't goose step.
Oh, man.
God. But
Mommy, I pulled the string and he's talking about a final solution. I don't understand.
Stop. Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
He says, never mind. I remember those AWA tapes because they were in my video store, along with the first video I ever watched wasn't even the wrestling video. It was not even WWF. It was that PWI Lords of the Ring.
Lords of the Ring.
That tape rocked.
Greatest tape ever. I had to go to a friend's house who had two VCRs and beg him to figure out the thing to plug them together so I could bootleg that copy of that for the video store.
Show is great.
PWI Lords of the Ring is the greatest wrestling videotape of all time.
Oh, it's awesome.
It introduced me to just so much stuff.
Yep.
It's the best.
It is the best because it connected me with the mags because I was watching WWF, you know, this was like, 84. I started watching in 83. And, you know, I already knew the mags anyway, but that's where I first saw Nick Bockwinkel. He was always like number one in the AWA top 10. I'm like, oh, wow, neat. Because, you know, then, or he'd be champion. Oh, that tape. And that tape is awesome. I wish I could find it.
You know, I it used to be on YouTube and now it's not. And it's so hard to find, but yeah. It is. It's got world class Crockett, Memphis. It's where the first I saw the clip version of Dundee Lawler, the first Loser Leaves Town match.
Yes.
And my mind was blown.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is the best shit I've ever seen.
You remember
seen.
That tape, right, Will?
Yeah, I own it.
Oh, of course he does.
Yeah. Notice he was quiet, you know, while you were. He's like, oh, greatest tape. I can't. Will's like, should I say that?
Hold on. I kept trying to interrupt, but I had myself on mute.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
No, I had myself on mute. Y'all wouldn't have heard me. So.
Yeah, that tape is awesome. But that's where I first – those things, like the video – that's where I first got myself exposed to Bockwinkel. And I actually liked him. I'm the opposite of you guys. I actually was like, wow, look at this suave guy with his – with his. He either had a slick-looking, like, white blazer and the red shirt, or he had that – he had, like, the awesome, like, warm-up jacket. I'm like, who is this guy with the long sideburns? And he just looked, like, cool. I don't know. Even though he was old-looking, I'm like, he's kind of a suave dude and – and he's got a like he's got the title, so he must be kind of tough if he's got the title. So I don't know. I was a little opposite of what you guys are, but I can understand other.
I was more like you know, Fonzie called. He wants his haircut back.
Yeah, he did. He did kind of have the bouffant at the top. That is pretty funny.
I think it's a shame that he never joined the WWF because he could have been Nick the Lion Tamer Bockwinkel with his whip. Maybe yeah. He could have come out with a real lion, just like every other 80s guy who came out with a real
yes.
Animal.
Maybe he could have been like lots of other 80s guys who got to have a giant money-making run at the end of their career with an animal.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, who was the Barnum and Bailey's lion guy? Gunther? What was
Gunther?
His name?
Gunther Gable Williams.
He does look Gunther like Gable Williams.
That's what I'm saying, man. He would have been the lion. You can tell.
Oh, my God.
It's like, oh, this will be money.
Oh, my God. That is
Nick,
so
I got it.
That is so funny. but now, when he retired, and this is where I think a lot of people got exposed to him. He actually worked. He did go to the WWF as a agent, and occasionally he did color commentary. I don't remember that.
And the ring appearance I'm speaking of was something that's lately. Been brought up is there was a Legends Battle Royal at the Meadowlands.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And he was in it. Luthez won it. You know, I've seen the entire match. It was taped for George Michael's Sports Machine. And I've seen all the raw footage of them interviewing everyone involved in it. So that was his one appearance in a WWF ring. It was right after that he was an agent and a commentator. And the reason that was brought up is become this story going around that Lanny Poffo was telling that Angelo Poffo asked Randy to make sure he could be in that match, and he assured his dad no problem. And for whatever reason, they said no, and it pissed Savage off, and it was like this little ember in the back of his head for like 15 years of why he was mad.
So when would this have been, Johnny?
86 or 87, I believe, because he was...
Let's see.
Yeah. It's hilarious. They made Chief J. Strongbow go out there without his headdress and stuff, and he was just fat.
Well, here we go. He apparently was on commentary with Gorilla at an MSG house show on... October 16th, 1987.
Yeah, it had to be in 87.
That's interesting. Let me see. Commentary again. Here it is. Yep. November 16th, 1987. Luthez won a battle royal. Oh, my God. How old were these guys? Oh, my God.
Oh, dude, you have to see this. You can find this.
Here are the guys.
It's like elder abuse at some point.
Here are the guys. You ready for this, Will? Here are the guys. Luthez, Pat O'Connor, Bockwinkel, Bobo Brazil, Gino Brito, Edouard Carpentier, Al Costello. Al Costello, he was still alive? Oh, my God. The Crusher.
Barely.
Dominic DiNucci, Tony Garea, Rene, when Tony Garea is the youngest guy in the match, Rene Goulet, Gene Kaniski, he was old in 83 when he ref the Flair match, Killer Kowalski, Pedro Morales, Baron Mikel Scicluna, Arnie Skoland,
yes,
Ray Stevens, Chief J. Strongbow, and Art Thomas. My God. Wow, that's crazy.
It's crazy. You need to see it. It's a spectacle.
Holy cow.
And the pops that some of these guys get.
Wow.
That area recognizes are amazing. Oh, there was no commentary on the footage I saw.
Yeah, no, but he kept doing. But according to this, he did commentary.
Oh, he did. Yeah,
he did commentary throughout the rest of 87. In fact, look at the Randy Savage. So these Saturday's main events that we're in the middle of now. Actually, he guest refereed some Honky Savage IC title matches too, according to this too. That's kind of awesome. So, any event, so he was there. Then, of course, he returned to the ring at the first Slamboree in 1993. He fought Dory Funk Jr. to a time limit draw, and then, of course, 94 he became WCW's on air commissioner. He was reunited with Bobby, but of course, they didn't talk about when they were in the AWA. In 2000, he and Yoshiaki Fujiwara were the commissioners for a short-lived shoot-style promotion, the Japan Pro Wrestling Association, but as the shoot-style market in Japan had been low since the collapse of UWF International, the wrestlers on it moved to other promotions. Bockwinkel was, of course, the president of the Cauliflower Alley Club until stepping down in May of last year, 2014. He was inducted into the 2007 WWE Hall of Fame by Bobby Heenan. He did make an appearance on Raw, March 29th, 2010, as part of Legends Lumberjack match between Christian and Ted DiBiase. Now, it says that they have not disclosed his cause of death. Now, I don't remember this. In 2013, Ric Flair told Steve Austin on his podcast that Bockwinkel had Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Bockwinkel's wife, Darlene, denied the claim, but did acknowledge that he did have health problems. And that's when he stepped down as Cauliflower Alley Club president. He was replaced by B. Brian Blair, which then led to an Iron Sheik heel turn, and then got the shit kicked out of him in the podium. So, it says that at the reunion in 2015, he appeared frail and said he was making his final public appearance due to dementia and heart issues, which is sad, and he passed away on Saturday. What kind of legacy did Bockwinkel leave for this business?
It's hard to say, because ultimately his peak was stuff we don't have on tape, right?
Right.
And then you got to think, was he like part of that old school mentality like Vern Gagne? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where they couldn't see the times were changing.
Right.
You know, but as a worker, man, he's a top 10 candidate, right? Top 20 candidate, whatever, you know. But I don't know what his lasting legacy is, except for maybe the face of the AWA. I think that's his legacy, face of the AWA. Hmm. Great wrestler. In fact, we kind of skimmed over. I mean, we talked about like when we saw him and, you know, him as an old man. We haven't really talked about some of his best feuds. I really want to get into his feuds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you mentioned the Vern Gagne feud. I thought that feud actively sucked because Vern Gagne, just like other promoters who were past their prime, couldn't get out of the way. You know what I mean? Like, Vern Gagne didn't need to win the belt in 1980. You know?
No, that was definitely him stroking himself. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
It's like Fritz Von Erich getting in there and winning matches at the end. You know,
And Fritz won the America's belt from Bundy.
From Bundy, but,
The only one I ever felt that did it right was Bill Watts with the Midnight Express, you know, when him and Stagger Lee teamed up to beat up the Midnight Express. You know, I thought that Bill Watts did it right because he's an old veteran, but it was against two smaller tag team guys, and the real goal was to get a Jim Cornette, and he didn't put the title belt on him.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, I didn't think that was one of his great. I thought the Hogan feud was actively great. Stupid booking.
Yes.
You know, booking that, you know.
That was Vern's selfishness ruined that feud, though.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it ruined his company because ultimately, you know, Vince took everybody that was worth
value.
It.
Well, but Hogan leaving had less to do about the title than it had to do with his Japanese bookings and the merchandise.
No, because Vern was always out to fucking screw somebody over.
as soon as Hogan was leaving, he's like, "Oh, I'll give you the belt," and Hogan's like, "Yeah, it's a belt, dude."
Yeah, while you want half my Japan money, yeah, fuck you.
Yeah. No, but that's what I'm saying. But the Hogan feud was great. One of my favorite feuds, I think Johnny will agree with this, is because I saw Vern in Japan. I saw more footage of Vern in Japan than I did like before I dived into the AWA.
Mm-hmm.
His Japan stuff was okay. I mean, he had some really good matches there, but it didn't make me think Bockwinkel's a world beater. You know, I thought his feud with Lawler in Memphis was awesome. Yeah. And what was great about that are the promos, because Lawler's one of the world's greatest promos. Bock's one of the world's greatest promos. And Lawler, you know, for... It is what it is. He's known for his
his punches, Mr. Lawler. His
punches.
Your punches.
And that's all Lawler does in the ring. So they build an entire feud, or at least a match, around Lawler getting fined every time he punches Bockwinkel. Yeah. Huh. So then he proceeds in the match to just punch Bockwinkel in the face. Such an awesome, awesome feud, you know. And
he gives the great promo. He's like, "No one is denying, Mr. Lawler, that you are an incredible puncher, but the name of the game is wrestling. I am the world's greatest wrestler. You, sir, are a fighter. $5,000, Mr. Lawler." And then he proceeds like, "Oh, money well spent. Pop, pop, pop."
Yeah. Now, when was that? I don't remember him in
82.
Oh, it's awesome. 83. And that hair that Buffon were making fun of, the reason he has all that, it's a great way to sell. We all know long hair is a great way to sell. And he just had it up in a Buffon. And you watch those Lawler matches, when he's selling those Lawler punches, his hair just goes a flying. And it just really adds to the effect that Lawler really just punched this smug asshole right in the face. It's great.
I got to find that.
Oh, I have it. Just talk to me later, Scott. Mm. I'll make sure you get it. But it is awesome. Then he had the great feud with Kurt Hennig, which produced one of the top five matches of the 80s with that hour-long draw. What was so great about that, and I watched that with Johnny, and Johnny knows this,
oh yeah,
is that it's a match that had – it really did have an act one. A lot of times Iron Man matches, they're meandering or they're boring. This – really had an act one, an act two, and an act three.
Mm.
And it went from two baby faces respecting each other to, you know, to baby face, young baby face getting flustered by old baby face to flat out brawl, bloody, nasty brawl in the last stanza. Yep. Right, Johnny?
Oh, yeah. With Bockwinkel still bringing out a few cheating things because, and he explained this, it's that great role of he didn't change. As far as like when he started feuding with heels, he didn't change. The guys he fought changed. So he's having this babyface match with Hennig, and it gets, you know, starts getting a little rough. Now, he'll bring out the cheating because he's Nick goddamn Bockwinkel, and he'll do whatever it takes to win because he knows to be a champion, you have to cut corners every now and then.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, it was great. And what I loved about that, and we mentioned it earlier, the Zbyszko feud, is the Zbyszko feud might have had some of the best sub-10-minute matches of all time.
Exactly.
Like, those matches lasted like 5 minutes, and they were just like just barn burners, you know, where they just attacked each other. Bockwinkel basically attacking Zbyszko from the before the bell even rang.
Yeah, and in the storyline, going to my previous point of the turn of Bockwinkel, you know, he's been a heel in this territory since, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, forever.
Right.
But who can turn him babyface for this last run? It's got to be Larry Zbyszko, who's even worse of a scumbag. And they started as a tag team. and they start feuding, and that's how they turn Bach faces, because as much as we hate Bach, he's our guy, and everyone hates Larry Zbysko. He's the most hateable motherfucker in wrestling, and that's how they turned him, and it was the perfect choice of an opponent to turn a longtime heel. And Will's absolutely right. They weren't having, classics. They could have. They hated each other. They had 8-minute, 6-minute just brawls, and they were great stuff.
Yeah, it was awesome. And so I think Bachwinkle, I mean, he is as advertised, man. He's one of the best, you know. So
yeah.
I really wanted to make sure that we included those feuds. I mean,
no doubt.
Yeah. Johnny's rendition of the Bach promo on the punch-in was just spot on. That was perfect. That was one of Johnny's best jobs.
Yes, that was very good. Now we have it for posterity. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Nick Bachwinkle, one of the greatest ever. He's in the WWE Hall of Fame. And he passed away at the age of 80 this past weekend. So rest in peace to one of the greatest heels in the history of this business. Guys, it has been fun. Very enjoyable, as always. Will, continued great work, you and my PIC, with the Dangerous Alliance podcast. Mr. Sorrow, continued great work on Brainbuster, and we will have we're going to have a PWO. Like I said, we have to, I know you have your regular show with your regular champions and contestants, but we still do have to do a kind of like, when TNA went on Family Feud, or we need to have like a PWO, PTBN, Brainbuster.
I'm so old. I thought they were about to say Battle of the Network Stars.
Yeah.
I'm just like, so everyone has to, all the guys have to wear itty bitty little gym shirts.
Yes. And Joe Frazier has to drown in the pool.
Yes, exactly.
He's doing the crab.
And we need Howard Cosell. Somehow it's like, it's amazing.
That's right. Look at Frazier. I just found.
Drown goes Frazier. Drown goes Frazier.
I just found it. I found the Lords of the Ring tape on eBay for
$4. No shit. Now, who has a VCR?
Me. I have a combo still. I will never get rid of my VCR. I got too much shit. I will never get rid of my VCR.
Oh, I still have the actual VHS tape of it somewhere.
This is the VHS tape. This is the original VHS tape.
I have a handful of VHS tapes I won't throw away just because I love them, but I'm never going to watch them on anything again.
I'll watch this Lord of the Rings tape. It's amazing that one of the first guys I ever – it's amazing that the first announcer I ever saw was Gordon Solie, because he's narrating it. Yeah, Fantastics are on
drunk.
It. Very drunk.
No, Fantastics aren't on it.
No, the Fabulous ones. I always get those two confused, Fabulous ones.
Imagine, the Fabs and the Road Warriors.
Yep.
From Memphis, of course, and the Fabs Moondogs, just the smallest clip of that brawl they have. When Lance Russell is like, now Stan's got the bone and it's all going on. I was like, fuck yeah.
Then there was like, there's a couple of matches from the David Von Erich Memorial Show, not just Flair and Kerry.
Junkyard Dog and Missing Link, the six man.
Iron Sheik's on it somewhere too. Yeah.
Iron Sheik's not on that.
Oh no. Okay.
Harley Race beating Dory Funk Jr. God, I know that whole tape from beginning to end. But the most important thing on it, and Will, I know it brings up a lot because it's the anthem of the state of Texas, and it's a song called Heaven Needed a Champion.
Oh yes.
And that's on there. What they don't have on there is the footage we've seen is after that chick sings that awful song, Mark Lawrence gets on the house mic and goes, that was Heaven Needed a Champion in honor of the late David Von Erich. That single is available at all of our concession stands right now. Please go buy your copy.
Your referee, Brown Golubic and David Manning. Now ring the checkmate. And the Magic Dragon. I love Mark Lawrence. He's coming on. He's on somebody's podcast soon.
He was on.
No, he was already on.
Flair's or Austin's?
No, Austin. It was
Austin's. That's what it was. Yeah, he's no, like a mystery.
Flair got David Manning.
I think he's on. I think he's a minister now or something. Anyway,
he was a minister then.
Oh yeah, he was. That's right. Yeah, he was on. Was he on the? Because I have both of the world class DVDs, the WWE one, And then the one that the guy made, that other guy made, I think it's called Legends of World Class or something. And I think he's on that one. And that's got like a whole Keller disc two or something. I think he's on one of those.
That's a depressing watch.
It is a depressing watch. I miss Gary Hart. I like Gary Hart. So I just want to let everyone know it is a very busy rest of the calendar year. So Main Event is going on hiatus after this great episode. We will be back on Wednesday, January 6th, and with our year in review special. I don't know who will be on yet, but I'm going to officially open up the Main Event invite to everybody. I mean, I'm going to open this up, well, almost everybody, but I want to get so many different people on. I'm going to make Parv come on at 3 o'clock in the morning.
What the hell is this? Seasons? What are you doing? Season taking 2 months off? Come on, man. Have some work rate.
Really, Will? I do more podcasts than you. All right. Don't tell me about fucking work rate. Okay.
And everyone's invited except the Irish.
they're all expendable.
Oh no, no. Blazing Saddles reference.
Yes.
Oh, prairie shit.
So for Will and for Sorrow, I am Scott. You're in the Main Event. Enjoy Sunday. Lord only knows what'll happen. And there, of course, will be a reaction show where you will either love it or hate it. Happy Thanksgiving.